This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
Welcome everybody, it's World Wide Wave time, the show that takes you around the globe, one country at a time. And a big thank you to Dylan and the gang from Generation Next. Tonight you've got Chris Heath and myself, Matt. We're taking you around the world to Hong Kong. This former British colony has cast off its shackles of sodomy to make homosexuality legal, but has it been able to normalise it? Or is silence the acceptable norm? Is it easier for gay men to marry lesbians than come out to their family? And could it be that people support gay marriage, but just don't want to get married? We'll be exploring all these issues with our guest tonight, Dr. Peter Robertson from Swinburne University, right here in Melbourne. He is the author of the recently released report, Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life Discourse. He's a sociologist, and his many research interests include ageing, sexuality, and social justice. He will be in the studio live with us tonight as we talk about Hong Kong.
And as always, we love hearing from you, so please do get in touch. Send us an SMS on 0427-JOY-949. Send us an email to the studio on onair@joy.org.au. You can call us at the front desk, Patching Through the Robert on 1300-JOY-949, or of course live on Facebook, W3JOY.
And we're going to kick off with some music, some Hong Kong music, but it's Australian. This is Walking on a Dream, the Hong Kong Blondes remix by Empire of the Sun. Now, Empire of the Sun is a Australian electronic music duo from Sydney, and this is a part of their award-winning album, Walking on a Dream. You're on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to World Wide Wave and Joy 94.9, and tonight you're here with Matt, Chris and Heath, and we are focusing on Hong Kong. Now, the situation in Hong Kong, as with many of the ex-British colonies, is very much the same depressing bans on male homosexuality, with lesbians being completely invisible. During the 19...
Those good old sodomy laws again.
Those good old sodomy laws. Thanks, England. During the 1970s and 80s, there was a public debate about whether the law was in line with human rights principles. And in 1991, homosexuality was decriminalised. However, interestingly, the age of consent was established for gay men at age 21, but for heterosexuals at age 16, presumably because they didn't want innocent young ones mistakening themselves for gays.
And that's just heterosexual men. So again, lesbians, no mention at all. No age of consent, no nothing.
Don't exist.
And it took a court case to change that.
It did. And the case went all the way up to the Hong Kong Court of Appeal, which held that the equal age of consent was the right thing to do. So since 2006, the age of consent has been 16 for everyone.
So a bit of progress there. And gender is something, gender identity and expression has been something that Hong Kong has been making some great progress in.
Yeah, very, very recently, actually. Just a few months ago, in May of this year, the Court of Final Appeal in Hong Kong ruled that the transsexual woman had the right to marry her boyfriend, which is completely wonderful and very, very progressive. Apparently, cross-dressing per se is not illegal in Hong Kong, and you can change your gender on legal documents, but you are not allowed to change your birth certificate even after sexual reassignment surgery.
So the transgendered person was able to marry their partner, but same-sex relationships are not legal. So in 2009, the Hong Kong government extended some limited recognition and protections to cohabiting same-sex couples, but that has not yet extended to civil marriage or civil unions.
So it looks like another case of the government lagging behind the court system.
And perhaps public opinion, but we will dissect that a bit more as the night goes on.
Indeed.
The representations in the media. Now, gay people, There is some visibility, and it tends to be quite recent, both in television and on film. In fact, in 2006, on mainstream television, a film called Gay Lovers was broadcast and caused some outrage from, of course, the social conservatives for reportedly encouraging people to become gay, that recruitment thing going on there.
It's not like they went for a subtle name, though, was it?
Well, no.
Gay Lovers.
Well, you wonder who's going to tune into that, really. I mean, you see a film like that and the social conservatives still took the time to tune in.
Well, lots of curious closeted people, I imagine. And now, in terms of public opinion, apparently in a 2007 poll, 56% of Hong Kongers, is that the right word, Hong Kongers?
Hong Kong, I don't know. Let's ask
Hong Kongians.
We'll have to ask our
Someone text in, please. Believed that Hong Kong was a good place for homosexuals to live in, while 35% believed it was not a good place to be.
So some progress still to be made in Hong Kong. And perhaps you've been there and had some experiences. Perhaps you are from Hong Kong yourself and you can share some of your stories. You can send us an SMS on 0427JOY949. Robert's out the front on 1300JOY949. On the email, we are on air at joy.org.au and we are live on Facebook. Now, time for a bit more music to get us into the mood. Now, this is some Canto pop. Now, all sorts of music these days seems to be, you know, you've got K-pop and J-pop and, you know, all the other pops. Well, there's Canto pop, which is the contraction of Cantonese and popular music. And in fact, the song we're going to hear is a Hong Kong native by the name of Anthony Wong, who came out as gay. Publicly, he came out at a concert in 2012 saying, "People don't need to guess whether or not I'm a Tongzi or gay anymore. I'm saying I'm gay, I'm a homosexual, G-A-Y. Joining us in the studio, we have Dr. Peter Robinson from Swinburne University right here in Melbourne, author of the recently released report, Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life Discourse. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks very much, Matt. Good to be here.
Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life's Discourse, in layman's terms, what does that mean?
I interviewed 97, just short of 100 men from 9 different cities around the world, and I was looking at what meaning they placed on various relationships according to where they were in the life course. So how young men looked at relationships. One thing I did find that was kind of interesting was with gay marriage, men 31 and under were almost universally in favour of the idea of gay marriage, whereas 51 and above, they were less convinced of the idea. Didn't mean to say that they're going to stand in the way of it, but they weren't convinced of its usefulness to them, who'd had long-standing relationships that hadn't been formalised.
Do you think that they saw marriage as an institution itself, whereas, because I know with a lot of young people, the discourse is much less about them personally wanting to get married. They may not even be in a relationship, but it's more about, you know, the removal of things that are seen as discriminatory. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes with other people, because they've seen marriage more as an institution, they can choose to opt in or opt out of that, especially if they're in a long-term relationship.
Look, I agree, Chris. I think there are a number of narratives weaving through it all. The younger people seem to want to have the same sort of relationship marriage rights as their straight brothers and sisters, nephews and nieces. The older men, I think, were influenced by the feminist ideology of the 70s, which seriously queried marriage and saw it as an institution that was oppressive of women. And I think a lot of those men, 50s plus, had taken that on and also had serious doubts about marriage. The younger men and women, I think, see it as a right. That doesn't mean to say that they will take it up. It doesn't mean to say that they are ignorant of it as oppressive to women. But they would like to see it as an option available to them.
Is that something that varied across cultures? I mean, we're talking Hong Kong tonight. Mm. In particular, did that differ? Did the opinion of marriage, same-sex marriage, differ in Hong Kong to the other cultures that you explored?
No, because the men I interviewed were almost entirely middle class, and they were aware of Western gay narratives, they were aware of Western gay culture, they had as much familiarity with Western gay norms as someone living in Manhattan or Chicago or Paris. They were well aware of what was going on. There were problems in Hong Kong, and the problems were not just the British inheritance that you mentioned before, but also I think the special status that family has, the desire not to let down parents. There was one particularly moving story, which was of a young man in his 30s who had to live at home because he couldn't afford to live out. And that's a problem in Hong Kong, like it is in Manhattan. It's too expensive for young people to have flats on their own unless they're working from an enormous international bank or accounting or law firm. Then they can. Otherwise, they have to live at home with parents, which means if they want to conduct a relationship, often they have to do it in a sauna or rent a hotel room. So it's back to the way it used to be in Sydney and Melbourne in the 1920s when men lived at home with their parents before the boom when flats were developed in the 50s in cities like Melbourne and Sydney.
And for men who were reaching an age where there was a family expectation of marriage, what did people choose to do at this age in Hong Kong? Did you find any trends?
Look, I only interviewed 14 men all up, so it's difficult to generalise, but...
That's in Hong Kong.
In Hong Kong, right, alone, yeah. There are a number of ways they dealt with it. One was to deal with the rejection that came with telling their parents, and this was the case of the young man who was in his early 30s who had a partner, and they rented a hotel room if they wanted to...
have some intimate time.
Yeah, have some intimate time. Yeah, indeed.
So that whole thing of even just touching, hand-holding, that's a taboo?
I didn't see a lot of it in public. I didn't go to any of the bars and clubs, but I was told by a number of interviewees that there is a particularly intense bar, club, sauna scene in Hong Kong. But there's that double life between conducting a social life underground, a social sexual life underground, and then conforming to some fairly traditional family norms above ground, if you like. And an expatriate, a European I interviewed who was in his late 50s with an Asian partner, I asked him why it was so difficult on my first trip to get in touch with... Asian gay men to interview, and it was very difficult. The second trip was fine because I got a letter of introduction via email, and so a whole lot of doors opened in Hong Kong. But this expatriate European said that he felt it was because a lot of mainlanders were coming into Hong Kong with very conservative values, more conservative than some of the very rich families that were well established in Hong Kong. And that they weren't university educated, they weren't particularly culturally aware, and this was reinforcing some very traditional values about same-sex relationships and people.
And so how is it that people from mainland China, I assume you mean, how is it that these people were interacting and imposing these views?
I think simply in terms of numbers... And there's a large influx, and the Hong Kongese are very snooty about mainlanders and make jokes about mainlanders arriving with suitcases to line up outside the high-end quality jewellery and fashion shops to load up and then return to the mainland. So just simply in terms of numbers... But it's a good question. I didn't follow that through with him. I don't quite know how it then filtered through to the rest of Hong Kong culture or gay culture in particular.
I suppose if there was a business expectation that you have to have a certain look to attract a certain type of clientele, then it could filter upwards and outwards, I suppose.
Yeah.
And
you mentioned that it was quite difficult to get people on your first trip. Is that... Is that because of the underground nature of being gay? It's not spoken about, or and then magically you got a letter of introduction and all of a sudden doors open. Mm. Tell us about that experience.
Well, the first time I was planning a trip to both Hong Kong and to Mumbai because I wanted to go to both cities because I assumed as former British colonies or dependencies that English would be spoken. And I'm monolingual, so I don't have Cantonese and I certainly don't speak Hindi. And I thought it was a way into different cultures where I'd be able to speak to gay men and find out what's going on, same-sex attracted men. But I did advertise for gay men, so I think there was a bit of self-selecting going on. People who are identified as gay responded to my request for an interview. I tried for 3 months posting on Craigslist, which is this American-based website where you can buy, you know, sort of kindergarten chairs or a new puppy or advertise for a flatmate and advertise for other sort of social sexual favours as well.
Or find a boyfriend.
Or find a boyfriend.
Excellent. What a great mixed website.
Yeah. And I found on the Hong Kong site thousands of advertisements for hooking up. So I posted on the community site or the community page of the website for Craigslist in Hong Kong and got no reply at all. For weeks and weeks, no reply to my request for interviewees saying when I was coming to Hong Kong, etc. So then I posted on the Melbourne page thinking that there'd be Hong Kong students in Melbourne who might like to meet me once we were both back in Hong Kong for an interview. Nothing came of that. So it seemed rather odd that there were lots of advertisements for meals or for more than a meal. And yet I could encourage no response to my request for an interview when I was going to be in Hong Kong. And so I did go, and I ended up interviewing three people, all of whom were expatriates, no Asian men at all.
Was Craigslist was listed in English, though, is that right?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think it's used by a mixed population, or is it mainly an expat tool for meeting people?
Good point. There were certainly people advertising on it who were flying in or flying out, who were crew on various international aeroplanes. But there also seemed to be a lot of local people advertising as well to meet up.
Now, the voice you're hearing there is Dr. Peter Robinson from Swinburne University in Melbourne. We're talking Hong Kong and his book, Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life's Discourse. Time for some messages and a bit more Hong Kong music.
This is Eve from Cameroon on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to World Wide Wave on Joy 949, and that song was the wonderful Denise Ho with The Science of Crying, and may I just say, most lesbian name ever, but I love it. Denise Ho, and good on you, Denise.
She is an out lesbian, so...
She is. She was the first Hong Kong female singer to be out, actually. So good on you, Denise, and good on you, Anthony Wong, who we heard from just before, for being out in Hong Kong.
And what better place to play their music than on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station. Tonight, we are in Hong Kong, and we've got Dr. Peter Robinson from Swinburne University, author of the book Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life Course. Peter, were there any other things about Hong Kong that sort of stood out as being different to the other countries and other cultures that you looked into?
Look, I thought it was interesting because from my understanding of what the West has gone through and the transition from gay men and women living underground or clandestine lives to coming out into the open, I had a sense that I'd step back to the 1950s or the 1960s in the West, when people were beginning to struggle against a rather repressive culture. And I liked the feistiness of the Hong Kong men and women who wanted to fight their government's approval of reparation therapy, which is a sort of psych method whereby people can be talked out or psyched out of their gayness.
Does that have religious links at all, or is it purely medical?
No, I'm fairly sure there were there was a religious organisation behind it. Some of the young men I spoke to said that the schools they'd been to, particularly the Catholic ones, were very difficult, and very difficult for them to be there as young men coming out or realising that they weren't straight. I liked the feistiness of the organisation. And what else about Hong Kong? Yes, it was that, I suppose it was that story I told before the break about young men having to rent hotel rooms or go to saunas to consummate their relationships, which took me back to historical sort of pictures of what it was like in Sydney or Melbourne or New York or London in the 1920s or 30s when people like us had to do that.
Hong Kong seems to be a bit behind in a lot of areas, or slow to progress, despite the fact that that homosexuality is now legal. In fact, you were just mentioning the issues, the psychological issues there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until 2011 that the Hong Kong College of Psychiatrists declared that homosexuality was not an illness. So that's a good 40-odd years after the rest of the Western world. Mm. Why so slow, do you think?
Again, I think it goes back to the British inheritance, the influence of very rich traditional families, the influence of the family, no matter what the socioeconomic status of the family, as well as the influx of conservative mainlanders. But there's another thing that's working against all of that, and that is the high number of men of all ages working for very large international corporations who are earning a great deal of money, expatriates and Asians, who have an expectation that they'll be able to be married, same-sex marriage, have an expectation that they will be treated well. And I think this is another area where the change is coming from. All those men working in, and women working in, large multinational corporations in Singapore and Hong Kong are exerting pressure on conservative governments in the region to change those laws.
And hopefully that filters down to families. And I want to know, please tell me, out of these 14 men, did you meet someone who was able to reconcile their family and their culture with their sexuality? Because as a young Chinese same-sex attracted person, that's what I want to hear.
I am struggling to find one from memory. Most of them had to lead double lives, and a couple of them were considering lives abroad in cities like Los Angeles if they could make that work. But I'm afraid...
Is that just escaping from the cold? That's their way out?
I have to say the only ones I interviewed in Hong Kong who had good relations with their families were expatriates.
Fingers crossed things are changing. I think down the road then.
I think things are changing, Chris. I really do. But I think it's going to take some time. And the groups of activists are certainly putting pressure on the legislative assembly, but I think in a very respectful way.
A very respectful and cautious way,
indeed.
Perhaps. Yep.
Yeah.
From your research, the book does challenge a lot of assumptions about the sex lives of gay men. Mm. Are we rampant sex addicts, or is there some more normality to our sex lives from your findings?
Look, I don't think we are as highly sexualized as a lot of people would like to think. Certainly the long-term relationships, men in relationships of more than 10 years, seem to show that sexual relations were important, but so also was companionship, and so also was friendship. And that's where I suppose my findings challenge some of the popular myths about gay men. The single men I looked at, there were two groups: one who were well attached to the club and bar scene, and another group who studiously avoided the club and bar scene, and both seemed to be travelling relatively well as single men. So their lives weren't failed because they were single men. Their lives were relatively good, and I thought that was a very positive finding, because I think there's a lot of damaging rumour about gay men invariably being single and alone. But I found men who were single and fairly well, and doing fairly well.
Did you find men in couples with families? either in Hong Kong or abroad?
Oh, yes. But unlike the experimentation that seems to be going on with young gays and lesbians, where alternative families are being set up, the men that I found who were fathers were mainly fathers because they'd had previous relationships with women. So they were a particular generation of men who had heterosexual relations with women until the time was right to come out. Not that they necessarily used the women. Sometimes people use the cover of marriage so that both the man and the woman can look after themselves.
And I suppose that's a time and place thing as well, that lots of countries are only opening up now to the idea of surrogacy or to the idea of same-sex adoption. And we'll see later on in the Worldwide Wrap that some places, in very, very developed places, are still not quite there yet.
Now, the cities that you explored, quite a wide range, but two of the cities you explored were Sydney and Melbourne.
Yes.
How different from gay men across the life course are our two cities?
Okay. It's a little difficult to generalise because the men that I interviewed in Sydney, I got through a social group that's quite interested in looking at social history. So they were sort of well-informed, well-aware men of all ages roughly from late 20s until 70s. So they weren't what I'd describe as a typical Sydney gay man, though there were some who knew what nightlife at 3:30 in the morning was like in
Sydney.
Shirts
off, party boys.
Yeah, that's right.
Who would have thought? Stereotypes.
Yeah, yes, that's right. The Melbourne men, they were the biggest bunch because it was close to home and easy to recruit. And I specifically went out to interview men in the 60s and 70s when I realised I had a gap in my sample. And I got a lot of those men from Melbourne. And they had interesting stories to tell about life in Melbourne in the 40s and 50s. So unfortunately, I can't help out there, Matt, with any really good or juicy stories about comparisons that would suggest Sydney's less well off than Melbourne.
Are those older gay men from Melbourne and other places, happy with where things are at in terms of being a gay person now?
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't find much disillusionment unless there was a really sad relationship breakup in the recent time or something like that. By and large, they seemed relatively content. The only thing on the horizon that worried some was what life would be like if they had to go into aged care and the fear that they might have to go back into the closet, or the fear that they'd have to deal with people coming to their house to look after them who might not be enlightened in their views, or similar care workers in accommodation facilities who were homophobic. That seemed to be the fear.
Well, that was actually my question. There's other shows on here that have been specifically commenting about that fear in the older gay community of having to go back into the closet. And I think it's gotten to the point where we've now got an LGBT rest home. I forget exactly where it is now, but it's somewhere in Victoria. That's sort of very specific to the LGBT community. And I think we'll probably end up seeing a few more of those cropping up, I would think, because we're in an aging society.
Now, Peter, the Honourable Michael Kirby wrote the foreword to your book, and he's made quite a number of similarities between yourself and Kinsey, the scientist of the 1950s, who came out with the famous 1 in 10 people are gay conclusion. That's pretty ringing endorsement. Are you pleased with that?
Look, Michael Kirby also launched the book at Swinburne a couple of weeks ago, and he reminded the audience that he'd said as much, and I'm incredibly flattered. My method probably was not as extensive as Kinsey's, and I interviewed only 97 men, not
thousands,
not 9,700 men. Right. No, that's true. But look, it is a fairly flattering endorsement, and Michael's very generous with his praise, and I'm glad he liked the book, and yes, I'm glad he's been so encouraging of it.
So everyone get out there and buy Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life Course, written by Dr. Peter Robinson, who is in the studio with us right now. And just one last question. Mm-hmm. You visited 9 major cities in mm-hmm. 6 countries. Mm-hmm. I know you can't generalise, but mm-hmm. where is it the best place to be a gay man at the moment? Where can people be the most free and the most out and the most diverse?
I think, look, if you have a lot of money, London and New York. If you're a fairly ordinary person, Manchester and Melbourne and Auckland are fine. Sydney also. Mumbai, depending on your background, I think it. For young middle-class men, Mumbai is fine. And for men who are prepared to live double lives, Hong Kong. So I think I've mentioned all the cities where I've been recruiting
except
people.
Except for Melbourne.
No, Melbourne's fine. Melbourne like Manchester.
We
very
know that.
Good.
We've got a gay radio station. Yeah. Dr. Peter Robinson from Swinburne University, thanks for being with us. Where can people get a copy of your book?
The best place is, because the publisher produces the book for university libraries, it's best to go online. It's not in paperback yet, so it's a little bit pricey. Book Depository, which is a UK seller, is a good way to get it at a reasonable price and no cost for postage.
So we might just pop at that on our Facebook page. You can find us at joy.org.au/worldwidewave and click through to Facebook there. Dr. Peter Robinson, author of Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life Course, thanks for being with us on Worldwide Wave.
Thanks very much, Matt.
You are listening to Joy 94.9 on the Worldwide Rap, and you're here with Heath, Matt and Chris, and you've just heard What Have You Done by GEM, Gloria Tang, also known as Get Everybody Moving, which is what her dream in life is.
I think that song
says that on the sheet.
That? Oh dear. That's a bit corny. She was doing well up until that point. Get Everybody Moving. I hope you were moving around there, and I hope you've been enjoying our discussion about Hong Kong tonight with Dr. Peter Robinson from Swinburne University. Time for it to go a little more worldly with our worldwide wrap.
So we have some more Russian news. Surprise,
I think it's every week we have Russian news at the moment.
just to show what the world standard is. Russia has now decided to stop all adoptions to Swedish parents due to a Russian court decision banning international adoptions to countries which afford homosexual couples equal marriage rights, which is an ever-growing number of Western nations, unfortunately. I wonder if that also means America, with only a few states that have legalized, but it looks like their Western adoption pool will have dropped dramatically. And just so we can read out a fun quote, Russian politician Vitaly Milonov has called homosexuals perverts and said, "The perverts? No, it is unacceptable. Homosexuals are perverts and should absolutely not be allowed to adopt children."
Who would have thought anti-gay laws would come in a country like that?
And while we're still in Russia, we've got the... I'm not sure whether this is true or not, but I've got to hear through the grapevine that Mr. Putin has been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Though thankfully not by the committee. Apparently lots of organisations can nominate, so one particularly
this
lovely
fruit
one.
This was Fruitcakes Incorporated that nominated or something.
Fruitcakes Incorporated, exactly. They did it on the basis that Putin always pushes for equitable solutions in the UN framework when he wants to resolve conflict or something.
Gosh, it makes you wonder that if someone thinks he's suitable to get the Nobel Peace Prize, that what these people are comparing him to.
Oh, I'm sure that he paid them to say it.
I think there are perhaps better candidates in the Philippines, where one of the congresswomen in the Philippines Parliament, he's pushing for LGBT desks to be in police stations, as in much like we have here with the GLOs, the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers, to have some dedicated resources for LGBT people in the Philippines, which I think is great.
That's wonderful.
I've got a story closer to home. Unfortunately, this is a bit of bad news. In Geelong, they've been accused of brushing off gay men who've experienced sexual assaults.
So this is police?
Police. There's a particular story about this guy who had been assaulted in a well-known beat not far from the police station, and went to the police station to complain and was brushed off and said, you know, you have to, we can't leave the station, you've got to call 000. And but basically through the whole process was completely brushed off and swept under the carpet.
That's incredibly unfortunate. So buck up, Geelong Police, if you're hearing this.
Indeed. And don't forget, there is also the Anti-Violence Project here in Victoria where you can report issues too. On a brighter note, Disney... Now, I don't think they've put this out, but somebody has come up with a list of Disney's gayest characters.
And it's all true. You'll never see them. You'll never see them the same way again.
Now, some of these I don't know, I have to say, but Ursula from The Little Mermaid, who was, in fact, modelled by a drag queen. And there's a photo here of Ursula, the animation, and a photo of the drag queen. And let me tell you, there's an uncanny likeness there. What about Scar? Scar from The Lion King.
So, oh, yes.
Ooh, he's a little bit...
analysis that this has been given is that Scar is effeminate, sardonic, and at the end of the movie appears not to have a relationship with any lioness. And the person who wrote this hypothesizes that Scar is an example of a coded gay, so referencing a time when being gay was seen as quite depraved. He's been put as the evil character, which we don't like so much.
He didn't. For that whole time that the main lion was growing, Simba was growing up, he didn't have a relationship, it seems.
And still in The Lion King,
who would have thought?
These people do point out that Timon and Pumbaa show an excellent example of gay parenting.
Oh, yes, that's true. That's true.
With a young Simba, so that's good.
And the other one mentioned there is the genie from Aladdin, which, of course, was made famous by...
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. How could I forget that?
I was thinking Mrs. Doubtfire. No,
that's right. And didn't he well and truly camp it up? So that's a little summary. We're going to post that one. In fact, we have already posted that one on our Facebook page, which is where you can find out lots of stories throughout the week. So we post news from all around the world, from the various sources and people that we speak to and interact with. We'll put that one up there so you can see the full list of the 14, the Disney's gayest characters. Now, that's we're coming towards the end of our show tonight. Did want to give a little bit of a plug. It's the first day today of the new grid. So there's some new shows coming on. And if you stick around tonight, coming up next, we've got Christian and his cohorts with the Vixen Hour. And they're talking about sex. Now, this is the sex workers show, the only sex workers show on radio in the world. And when I said to him, you're talking about sex, well, I would expect you to talk about sex. He says, we actually don't speak about it very often. So tune in. They're talking about what sex means to the general community, to the gay community, and to sex workers. Then after that is Nothing Sacred. This is with Jim Hyde, who's a community elder and has been around Joy for quite some time, discussing politics, current affairs, and our LGBTI community history with a panel of young presenters. So this is an intergenerational exchange of ideas and opportunities and a chance to share knowledge and spark some broader conversations.
Sounds fantastic. And for all the same-sex attracted women out there, happy Lesbian Day for tomorrow.
Happy Lesbian Day.
Happy Lesbian Day, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Chris and all the other... and to Squirrel and Shannon, who are a part of our show here as well, not here tonight, but happy Lesbian Day to you too. A big thank you to Dr. Peter Robinson from Swinburne University for coming in and speaking to us tonight. His book is Gay Men's Relationships Across the Life Course, and we'll post a link on Facebook to that. We've had quite a few messages throughout the week on Facebook to Sonia, Michelle, Max, Adrielli, and Infer. Thanks for being a part of our Facebook page and sending us messages. And to Robert on the front desk, he's out there every week helping us out. We'll be back same bat time, same bat channel next week with more news from around the world.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for being with us on Joy 94.9.
Hi, I am Fernando from Guadalajara, Mexico, and you are listening to Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to the Worldwide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.